The story of Dior is that of Christian Dior. It is also the story of his successors. In their time, their moment, their Dior age. Episode 3, The Dior Age of Gianfranco Ferré.
A real event in the world of haute couture before we go back to Cannes.
Marc Bohan's departure from Dior, an affair that has already been much written about.
The artistic director of the famous haute couture house for 28 years.
His successor is a 45-year-old Italian, famous in the world of couture. His name is Gianfranco Ferré. Christian Dior thanked Marc Bohan for his service. That was the news of the day on May the 11th, 1989. Dior, one of the most French names in the world, now acquired an Italian accent as the emotional embraced the sensational. For several years, it had been felt that the House of Dior was somewhat out of step with the fashion world and that the ready-to-wear was not what it should be. Monsieur Bohan was not a designer, he was a couturier. Except that haute couture did not dress many women anymore. So, rather than remaining attached to a never-declining pool of clients, why not infuse this haute couture with a new vitality? The more it made people dream, the more it would sell. Bernard Arnault, the CEO of Christian Dior Couture since the end of 1984, was driven by a passion for the history of his house, its heritage and legendary status. He was now seeking to fuse a fresh flamboyance with the excellence of its savoir-faire. I was faced with a fundamental problem, the future of design at Christian Dior, which is the world's leading luxury brand. And you know, sometimes in fashion, there are opportunities that don't come along twice. And that was the case with Gianfranco Ferré, one of the best-known and most famous designers in the world. Bernard Arnault was seeking an internationally renowned designer for Dior, with proven business acumen and the virtuosity of a great couturier. Gianfranco Ferré unquestionably fitted the profile for the role, and the fact that he was Italian would not prevent him from expressing himself in Paris.
I was the only one who possessed the taste for luxurious quality that's also associated with my own brand and which could be adapted to the requirements of Dior.
A successful Milanese designer, Gianfranco Ferré had been showing Alta Moda collections in Rome for 3 years, his own version of Made in Italy haute couture. He now had an appointment at Christian Dior, or rather, with Christian Dior. Ciao, Paris! Ferré had fallen in love with Paris on his very first visit when he was a student, and fell in love with Dior as he became fascinated with fashion. To his eyes, Christian Dior was a model couturier, the supreme example. And so he was unsurprisingly overcome with joy upon his arrival at his new Parisian home, 30 Avenue Montaigne. This was the beginning of a non-stop back-and-forth routine as Gianfranco Ferré divided his time between his own brand in Milan and Christian Dior in Paris. He was at the Dior studio 2 days a week, the office of dreams, as Monsieur Dior had called it, the very place where the legend was born. Gianfranco Ferré had a date with history in the archives. And as history is written by the victors, he turned to Christian Dior's triumphant sketches, which he went through one by one. 1947, 48, 49, up until 1957, the autumn-winter collection, the founding couturier's last. The treasures in the archives inspired Gianfranco Ferré, and he would make good use of them. I am very stimulated because I feel that the modernity Monsieur Dior had at that time was so alive, so important. He was someone who had perpetually honed the finesse and femininity of women. And on the other side, there's also the power of his very strong, very brilliant cutting. Architecture was the passion shared by both Gianfranco Ferré and Christian Dior. But while Ferré had graduated from the Politecnico di Milano, Christian Dior had never studied it, as his parents had envisioned a future for him in politics instead. These two sons of industrialists, raised with upper-middle-class values, dreamed of a different life. They would find it through drawing, their pencil strokes opening the doorways to their vocations.
It's not an empty word to talk about the architecture of a dress. A dress is constructed, and it's constructed according to the direction of the fabrics. The direction of the fabrics is the secret of couture, and it's a secret that depends on the first law of architecture, that of obedience to gravity.
That's what Christian Dior said in the Great Amphitheatre of the Sorbonne in 1955. The Dior archives clearly inspired Gianfranco Ferré, 600 sketches for the 90 designs that would become his first haute couture collection. That was a lot for the ateliers to handle, especially as it was their first time working with Monsieur Ferré, and the show was taking place in only 9 weeks. But the four premiers d'atelier and their army of petites mains were thrilled. Each creation was a tribute to Christian Dior himself. It was Dior on a grandiose scale. Madame Elisabeth's atelier was allocated two of the collection's most anticipated looks, the one opening the show and the one closing it. The first was given the name Silence. Shh, it's starting. Showtime. The date was July the 24th, 1989. First came the ensembles destined for businesswomen during the day, then evening dresses for the queens of the night. The overall impression was baroque. Was that because the new arrival was an Italian, or because the Dior essence was emerging again? Christian Dior possessed that same sense of opulence, of a kind which only haute couture allows, and which Gianfranco Ferré enhanced, reviving the splendour of the new look.
Gianfranco Ferré has just been awarded the Golden D for his first collection at Christian Dior. He clearly draws his inspiration from the opulence of the new look, and this is perhaps what struck the most with journalists.
This first collection was a declaration of love for the heritage of Christian Dior. The femme fleur of the new look reappeared from the past to enjoy a newfound success. Gianfranco Ferré now set his sights on re-energizing Dior, a renaissance through reminiscence. It's not about reinterpreting the fashion of the 50s. It's about revitalizing the name of Dior for what it means today. While he may have become the grand couturier of the House of Dior, Gianfranco Ferré was nonetheless a designer with a deep knowledge of the business. He first made a name for himself in the early 1970s with successful accessories and then dynamic ready-to-wear. It is he who would establish the Dior codes, which would be developed as the offer expanded. Codes to decode Dior in the eyes of the world, following the example of the Lady Dior created in 1995. D-I-O-R. The gold letters spelled out the Dior name like charms. Then its signature stitches delineated a caning effect, an allusion to the Napoleon III chairs that filled the house's haute couture salons during Monsieur Dior's time. I have always strived to make people think about Dior a little less about me. I purposely wanted to get closer and closer to his spirit in a natural way, a spirit that had been somewhat lost over the years. With the end of 1989 came the fall of the Berlin Wall.
At 4:45 this morning, the first hit was made on the Berlin Wall, and dozens of Germans, both Eastern and Western, climbed onto the historical monument. The Forbidden Zone is in the hands of the German youth.
And soon, the disintegration of the entire communist bloc. Times were changing. Anxiety-provoking developments were accelerating. The effects of the Gulf War cast a dark cloud over the capitalist world. Fashion started to express itself in unexpected ways through a counter-trend. Grunge. A seismic shift. Anti-fashion, which had started on the fringes, was now absorbed into the mainstream. Grunge gave way to minimalism. Jeans and t-shirts weren't really Gianfranco Ferré's thing. His contract would not be renewed. October the 8th, 1996, marked his last show, the last finale. He made his exit in a very dignified, gentlemanly manner.
I gave it the essence of the dream, I brought it the life of the world today, and now that life has set me on a different path without any rancor.
In November, he was a somewhat surprise presence at the Met Gala in New York, which was honoring a major Dior retrospective marking the 50th anniversary of the new look. It was his last public appearance for Dior, and an appearance eclipsed by another attendee, Diana, Princess of Wales, reigning over the evening, stunning in her haute couture nightgown, the new successor's first creation. The next collection, scheduled for January 97, promised to cause quite a stir.
This podcast was brought to you by Maison Dior. Discover the world the house encompasses, from haute couture collections to perfumes, by subscribing to the Dior podcasts, available on all audio streaming platforms.